And read the translation for 63 and 64, and then the purport for 62. Rising and falling again and again at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna for a long time, Lord Brahma remembered over and over the Lord's greatness he had just seen. Then, rising very gradually and wiping his two eyes, Lord Brahma looked up at Mukunda. Lord Brahma, his head bent low, his mind concentrated, and his body trembling, very humbly began with faltering words to offer praises to Lord Krishna. Purport for verse 62 by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Lord Brahma bowed down like a stick, and because Lord Brahma's complexion is golden, he appeared to be like a golden stick lying down before Lord Krishna. When one falls down before a superior, just like a stick, one's offering of obeisances is called dandavak. Danda means stick, and vat means like. It is not that one should simply say dandavat. It's a new fashion, isn't it? Everybody says dandavat pranams instead of paying obeisances. Rather, one must fall down. Thus, Brahma fell down, touching his foreheads to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. And his crying in ecstasy is to be regarded as an abhishek, bathing ceremony, of Krishna's lotus feet. He who appeared before Brahma as a human child was in fact the absolute truth, Parabrahman. Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdiyate. The Supreme Lord is Narakriti. That is, he resembles a human being. It is not that he is four-armed, Chaturbahu. Narayan is Chaturbahu. The Supreme Person resembles a human being. This is also confirmed in the Bible, where it is said that man was made in the image of God. Lord Brahma saw that Krishna, in his form as a cowherd boy, was Parabrahman, the root cause of everything, but was now appearing as a human child, loitering in Vrindavan with a morsel of food in his hand. Astonished, Lord Brahma hastily got down from his swan carrier and let his body fall to earth. Usually, the demigods never touch the ground, but Lord Brahma, voluntarily giving up his prestige as a demigod, bowed down on the ground before Krishna. Now, although Brahma has one head in each direction, he voluntarily brought all his heads to the ground and touched Krishna's feet with the tips of his four helmets. Although his intelligence works in every direction, he surrendered everything before the boy Krishna. It is mentioned that Brahma washed the feet of Krishna with his tears. And here the word sujalai indicates that his tears were purified. As soon as bhakti is present, everything is purified. Sarvapadi vini muktam. Therefore, Brahma's crying was a form of bhakti anubhav, a transformation of transcendental ecstatic love. Om agyan timirandasya gyananjana shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Mandeham Shri Guru Shri Yatapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagna Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padhan Sahagna Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Paramami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. After seeing this, Lord Brahma hastily got down from his swan carrier, fell down like a golden rod, and touched the lotus feet of Lord Krishna with the tips of the four crowns on his head. Offering his obeisances, he bathed the feet of Krishna with the water of his tears of joy, rising and falling again and again at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna for a long time. Lord Brahma remembered over and over the Lord's greatness he had just seen. Then, rising very gradually and wiping his two eyes, Lord Brahma looked up at Mukunda. Lord Brahma, his head bent low, his mind concentrated and his body trembling, very humbly began with faltering words to offer praises to Lord Krishna. Do you ever feel like what you do in this world determines who you are? Have you ever felt nervous about not being seen because you feel like you haven't done enough to prove who you are? Or do you ever feel keen to let people know exactly what you've done because it being acknowledged gives you a greater sense of accomplishment? Just knowing that somebody else knows I did this, does it give you a greater sense of accomplishment? Does your sense of being a devotee depend on how much you do? And how much you do getting recognized? We can get so busy in our sense of identity that's related to what we do, who we are to someone in this world, the abilities we have, and the results we achieve with the abilities that we have, that we can quite literally forget who we are, even whilst practicing a process which is there to remove that very covering. There was a Q&A last week with the youth and Maharaj, and the question came up that if Krishna's love is unconditional, then why has he placed so many conditions in order for us to experience that love? And is his love really unconditional if we are required to do so many things to be able to experience it? And I heard, like, when the back and forth was going on, the hosts were kind of mumbling to each other, oh, yeah, so that just basically means that Krishna's love is not unconditional. That's what he's saying. And they just kind of let it go. And so there wasn't a conclusion, there wasn't an acceptance of Krishna's love is unconditional. It was seen as a transactional thing. But actually, if you look, Krishna's love is unconditional. It is unconditional. What does unconditional mean? It never stops, right? It's and what do we understand by unconditional? It's not mixed with anything. It's not motivated by anything else. It's uninterrupted. This is what we also are told would be pure devotional service. Uninterrupted, unalloyed, yes, and favorable. So Krishna's love is unconditional. But because we are conditioned, and we hear this word conditioned a lot, right? There's so many different types of conditioning and conditioners, right? Conditioning could mean softening, right? But what conditioning means really is what is the state of this, right? When you think about fabric, you have clothes conditioners, you have hair conditioners, and we think conditioners make everything soft. But material conditioning, what is the material condition? What is my condition? Can I see clearly? Can I see whether Krishna loves me? Can I understand unconditional love? Do I have the qualification to understand it? You know, it's things are what they are. We perceive based on our condition, the condition of our vision. Isn't it? Do you take even a scientific paper? One person will look at it and just think it's mumbo jumbo. It's all these letters and mathematical, you know, calculations and statistics. And one person could just look at it and this looks like mumbo jumbo. Another person will analyze it and tell you whether it is valuable or not. So when Krishna is placing these requests, live this way, it will help you to understand me. Eat this way, it will help you to understand me. What he's saying really is, I'm trying to help you change your condition back to a nature where you can understand how I lovingly reciprocate with you all the time. Because Krishna is who he is, regardless of whether we see him or not. Krishna loves us unconditionally, whether we experience it or not. That is his choice, it is his right, and he is the source of all love. We can't stop him from loving us, but what we can do is see whether we want to experience that love. Look at a 3D movie. Anyone here watched a 3D movie? Even a 3D movie. The 3D movie is a 3D movie. It doesn't have anything to prove. It's a 3D movie. That's the state it's in. You walk in without 3D glasses, it'll look blurred. You can't sit there going, that's not a 3D movie. It's not a 3D movie. I don't believe it's a 3D movie because I can't experience it with the eyes that I have now. Well, no, because for a 3D movie, you have to wear 3D glasses. As ugly as they are, as cumbersome as they are, you've got to wear them. And then you can see the picture clearly. Otherwise, it feels like, my gosh, this is giving me a headache. So when we try to understand this world, Krishna's words, Krishna's activities, in just a human conditioning, our vision's blurred. It gives us a headache. You know, you just try, and so many people try to academically understand Krishna's activities, they get lost. How can a person who speaks the Bhagavad Gita, okay, who can with a tiny army, five young men, okay, five kings, five princes, and a tiny army beat millions, speak this Bhagavad Gita? But when he was a little kid, he used to pee in the gopis' houses, he used to break makkhan pots. How is that the same person? In human life, we see if somebody is of great character, we find that great character even when they're a child. And then they can't figure out how this personality would do these things when he's a naughty things when he's a child, and then he grows up to be this great wise philosopher. Why? Because Krishna is a person. He's not an academic exercise. Okay, so Krishna's love is unconditional. And we are conditioned. And so we have forgotten who we are. Shirada Gokul Nanda ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Gaurinita ki jai. So part of our conditioning is that we've forgotten who we are because we are clinging to who we are in this world. So strong is that magnetic attraction between this conditioned mind, this human mind, right? It's been conditioned with the false ego. It's made the mind soft and weak and whimsical and made it move from, you know, one place to the other, scattered, right, in a thousand directions. It's so attracted to the transient identity in this world that even when Krishna is standing right in front of us, we won't recognize him because we'll put the veil of friend or enemy or boss or family member or something else or our own weaknesses. Now, most of our anarthas and karma we experience in the mind, people forget this. We think all our karma is about what happens to us and our events and experiences. Actually, most of our karma is going on in here, you know. And it's so strong, this forgetfulness. It's so easy to get absorbed in our various identities here. It can happen even to the greatest and the best of personalities. Once upon a time, 5,000 years ago, when Krishna was 5 years old, on Lord Balaram's birthday, Balaram had been kept back home. He wasn't there because it was his birthday. Yashoda Devi and Rohini Devi kept him home to celebrate his birthday. So he didn't go out that day with Krishna and the cowherd boys. And so that's why they were, Radhanath Maharaj was explaining this on Saturday, that's why Krishna was able to go into Agasura's mouth with the cowherd boys, because if Balaram was there, he would have stopped him. So on this day, And these many wonderful activities of Krishna and his friends, his boyfriends, his girlfriends, the residents of Vrindavan. So many wonderful things are happening on that day. So many things happen in one 24-hour given period. It's constant. The variety, the joy, is constant. So on that very day, our very dear creator of this universe, Chaturmukh Brahma, he was watching, as you would do. You know, this personality who took birth from none other than the navel of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu himself. He's the head of our sampradaya. He who created every single one of the 14 planetary systems. We sing his prayer every single morning. We sing his words, don't we, at 7 a.m. How often do you think about him? We take his words to read. Do you think about him? We've all been Brahma. Prabhupada explains that Brahma is the first birth the jiva gets when they leave the spiritual world. And then from there, they can go back straight away, or they can take many, many more births if they don't make it back. So, you know, he was bearing witness to these beautiful pastimes of Krishna and his associates on this very planet, on this day. Now, he'd seen Krishna destroy the Agasura demon very shortly after Krishna destroyed the Agasura demon. You know, just like young kids do, if any of you have ever taken care of young kids, 1 minute they're full up and 10 minutes later they're hungry again. So very soon after killing Agasura, Krishna and his friends were thinking, gosh, you know, we're really hungry. We're really hungry. And you know, the calves, they also need to graze. Let's go and find a nice spot somewhere. Let's go find a nice spot somewhere. And as they're wandering around the beautiful forest of Vrindavan, it's described in Bhagavatam how everything in Vrindavan is perfect. Everything. You know why everything in Vrindavan is perfect? Because of the spirit of cooperation. Each personality, each entity, it doesn't matter if they are in this world, moving or non-moving. Everything in the spiritual world is alive. Even the rocks have consciousness. Okay, so everything in Vrindavan cooperates. The sun beats to the sun's full strength. Now, anywhere else, that would burn you. But the wind cooperates with the sun, even though the wind and the breeze wants to also do their best. They cooperate. So as the heat of the sun comes, the wind creates a beautiful breeze that cools you at the same time and wafts the fragrance of the beautiful flowers, jasmine, roses, lotuses, orchids, so that the air is finely fragranced. And the flowers are so happy to lend their scent to be carried away by the wind and distributed. How often are we happy for our opulence to be carried away and distributed and given freely? The clouds cooperate. They come in front of the sun and pass through just enough to allow enough light and heat that the atmosphere, whether it's summer, winter, autumn, or spring, is always perfect. The grass is lush. The ground is always soft. Even though rocks by nature are hard because they have to keep things together, when Krishna steps on these rocks, they melt under his feet. So it's all a very pleasing atmosphere. So for Krishna and the cowherd boys to find a nice pasture ground for the calves to eat, it's not so difficult. It's not so difficult. Literally round the corner. So Krishna, you know, he looked around with the boys and they came to a beautiful clearing in the forest. And he describes how, you know, there's a beautiful river here from where the calves can drink, and the sand is soft, and, you know, we have the shade of the trees, and we can play here after we've eaten. Let's sit here and let's have our lunch. Now, as the calves started grazing and some of them went to have a drink of water, Krishna and the cowherd boys sat down. Is there a picture in this room? No, but I'm sure you've seen it. Krishna sitting there with his packed lunch, and he's surrounded by cowherd boys of different colors, wearing different outfits with different expressions on their faces, all fixed looking at Krishna. Is he looking at me? Is he looking at me? Look, Krishna, look what I have in my lunch pack. Do you want to try some? And Krishna's also like, look what Mother, you show them my packed meat. Do you want to try some? This is their joyful friendship. You know, Krishna takes his flute and he tucks it between his belt and his dhoti. So his hands are free. Because everybody he wants with him right now is with him. And, you know, describes in Bhagavatam how some of the boys are using flowers as plates and bowls, and some are using slabs of rocks as plates, and some are using leaves. There is no such thing as dirt in Vrindavan. That's one secret. If you go to Vrindavan, Bhumi Vrindavan, change your relationship with the dust. It is not ordinary dust, no matter how much it looks like ordinary dust. If you change your relationship with the dust, your time in Vrindavan will be much more peaceful and much more transformative. So the cowherd boys didn't have these fears about, oh, they knew everything, the flowers, the rocks, everything, they cooperate with us. So they're really enjoying, you know, they're enjoying eating together. And Brahma's watching all this. I'm so sorry, I have a cold. So Brahma's watching all this. And he's becoming bewildered. Why is he becoming bewildered? Because he's a great creator. He's created 14 planetary systems. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has come to destroy a demon called Kansa. Surely he can't be some little blue boy who sits in the middle of a field and just laughs and jokes with little kids and eats fruit and kachoris, you know, and plays around and plays his flute and just, you know, has no problems after killing a snake. It's like, he's bewildered. Scribes this in Bhagavatam. Shukadeva Goswami is telling Parikshit Maharaj, you know, Brahma, he's used to working hard to create. He spends 12 hours a day just creating. 12 hours a day, because there's so many different timescales on the different planetary systems. He's always having to take care of somebody's creation and destruction, right? So he's a busy man. He doesn't have time to sit and chill out with his friends. Okay, he certainly doesn't just go and relax as if, you know, I just kick off my shoes and put down my crowns and, you know, have a good time. He's looking at Krishna saying, this can't be my Lord. He's far too relaxed. And, you know, there's this term for Krishna, Shukadev Goswami uses to describe describe Krishna. And this term is Yajna Bhuk. Yajna Bhuk means that Krishna is somebody who only eats the remnants of a yajna. So it's bewildering for Brahma to see Krishna taking from little boys. They haven't done any yajnas. They're just taking things out of their lunch bag and just feeding him. And he's feeding them. They're just sitting like friends. So it's bewildering. This is love. This is relationship. When you see two people who have a loving relationship, if you've not had an experience like they've had, it can be bewildering. Like, wow, it's fascinating. He was fascinated, but also he was thinking, hang on a minute. This can't be my master. And I will show him. I will show the world. Well, all these people running after this little blue boy who all he does is eat lunch with his friends and play. Even this killing of Agasura, it was probably just some magic trick. I will show him. Look what I've done. Look what I've done. I've created 14 planetary systems. It's hard work. Look what I've done. I will show him. So he made a plan. He made a plan. He thought, you know, he's just a little boy. How will he manage without his friends? And so I'm just looking at time thinking, my gosh, my story time's going to go on too long, so I'm going to speed it up a little bit. So he then he makes a plan to steal the cowherd boys. Now, in this time, as little calves do, they're like little children, they wandered off. And the cowherd boys got worried. They said, oh, where have our calves gone? They've disappeared. We can't see them anywhere. Krishna, what shall we do? Krishna, what shall we do? And Krishna says, you don't worry. You don't worry. You eat your lunch. digest it nicely, enjoy the nice preparations that our mothers have sent. I'll take something with me. He takes a little bowl of yogurt and rice in his hand. He describes how he's got some fruits as well between his fingers. You know, children, they have these, Krishna has these soft, soft lotus hands, and his palms are reddish, you know, and his fingernails are bright and white. And he's holding very sophisticated, but also childlike. He's holding this bowl of yogurt and rice and fruit in his hands. And he's concerned for his friends. And he's saying, oh, I will go and get the calves and bring them back to you. You relax and eat. So off he goes to look for the calves. In the meantime, Brahma's stealing the calves and the cowherd boys and transports them to a place where he thinks Krishna has no access to. And he steals them away. And as Krishna looks for the calves, can't find them, and he comes back and he sees that the cowherd boys are also not there. He knows exactly what is going on because he's fully cognizant of everything at all times, even when he chooses to forget who he is. Can your brain get around that? When we forget, we don't remember. When we forget, we just forget. There's no, oh, I forget and remember at the same time. This is why Krishna's perfect. He can forget and remember at the same time. Get your head around that after class, not now. Okay. So he thought, this is Brahma. I know Brahma's done this. But if he doesn't recognize me, I have to show him how to recognize me. So what does Krishna do? Now, this is amazing because Krishna does many things. He has many outcomes from one thing. Like many outcomes from one thing. He expands himself as every single calf and every single cowherd boy for many reasons. And some of those reasons that are described is firstly to give pleasure to their respective parents who love Krishna more than they love their own children. And their love for their children is also perfect. To give pleasure to the cows who love Krishna even more than they love their calves, even though their love for their calves is perfect. Krishna also does it so he gets to experience this Vatsalya love from all these different personalities who want to love him in this way. And as a side effect, he also teaches Brahma a lesson. You know, teaching people lessons is not Krishna's favorite thing to do. Being God is something Krishna just does some of the time. But he is Krishna all the time. So this went on for 1 year, exactly 1 year. You know why? Because of the time difference between Brahmalok and Earth. Brahma thought he'd gone away just for 1 second. He'd put them away and thought, oh, come and check on things because I'm so powerful, you know. What's going to have happened? He's probably, you know, crying, bewildered, lost. He's got no one to show off to. Let's see what's happened to Krishna. But in that 1 year, it's described how the residents of Vrindavan, the mothers, the fathers, the elder gopis, the elder gopas, the cows, were so bewilderingly ecstatic. So bewilderingly ecstatic. See, usually there was a discrepancy between how much they loved their own children and they love Krishna. But there was no discrepancy anymore. Their love was so intense for their own children. And this harmony in the atmosphere of pure Krishna prema at all times, in all the families, towards every living entity, was something that Balaram noticed just 5 or 6 days before that full year was completed. So, you know, he asked Krishna, he says, I don't understand. He goes, what's going on? What's going on? How is it that this discrepancy isn't here? And so Krishna let him in. And he knew, he was like, this must be Krishna's work, because this must be Krishna, because I've never seen anybody love anyone else like this unless it's Krishna. So he was letting on the secret. But exactly 1 year later, again, Balaram is at home because it's his 6th birthday. Well, Krishna and Balaram, yes, they're both turning 6 that year. And so when Brahma comes back, though, he's surprised. He's so surprised. Because instead of seeing a bewildered, heartbroken magician who has no one to show off to and is lost without his friends, he sees everything carrying on even more ecstatically as when he left. Even more ecstatically. He can't believe it. He cannot believe it. He's thinking, what? But I just stole everybody. How is everything carrying on without me? Without my controlling? Does that happen to you sometimes? You cling to something, thinking you're the only person who can do it. Somehow or another, you get removed from it. And you come back and you find, oh, everything's ticking along quite nicely. Maybe even better than when you did it. It pinches your pride a little bit, doesn't it? Maybe sometimes a lot, especially if we're very attached to our particular service or role or the way we're perceived. So, of course, this bewildered Brahma. Bewildered can have many, many emotions attached to it. And I won't assume his emotional state, but he was definitely bewildered. And then Krishna clarified his bewilderment. He showed Brahma something that very, very, very few people are allowed to see simultaneously. When Brahma saw every single cowherd boy, he saw every single cowherd boy transform into four-armed Vishnu. Every single one, including Krishna. And as well as seeing them transform into four-armed Vishnu, with all of his different paraphernalia, the conch, the disc, the lotus flower, he also saw all of Krishna's expanded energies. He saw sanskar, which actually, I always thought sanskar just meant impressions, but it's actually also translated as reformation, which is amazing. That sanskaras allow us to reform, and it's very accurate actually, so it makes a lot of sense. He saw the elements, he saw all the different internal energies, external energies, he saw so many different things. And he became even more bewildered. And at the same time, almost immediately, Krishna changed back into this little boy, simply standing with a little palmful of fruit and yogurt and fruits in his hands. This cleared his vision. This cleared his condition. This was his transcendental 3D glasses. Okay, this happens to all of us. We are blessed. Okay, we are blessed when we have these opportunities in our life where our old perceptions of how the world works are completely smashed to smithereens. Krishna wants us to have a new way of seeing. Why? Because he wants us to be able to see him. He wants us to be able to understand him. Brahma had to kill his conception that he was a controller, that he was a creator, in order to understand that he is something to Krishna and someone to Krishna beyond being Brahma. Brahma's life seems very long to us, right? His one day is very long to us. One day is 4.3 billion years. So we won't even do the maths for how long his life is. It describes in the third canto that the full lifetime of Brahma, that 100 years, okay? 100 years with 12 months, 30 days in each month, each day is 24 hours, and 12 hours, 4.3 billion years for us. Don't do the maths. If you know how long it is for Krishna, less than a moment. And a moment in the Bhagavatam is described as 1/11th of a second. Okay, so Brahma, even with his identity, had to remember, had to learn, understand that, gosh, I really have to forget who I am to see who Krishna is. So we have to forget who we are to remember who we are. And Krishna reciprocates lovingly with his devotees depending on how covered or uncovered our vision is. See, when our conditioning is thick, the more we are bound to this identity, Krishna reciprocates with us to remind us that he is God, that everything is ultimately under his control. But as we surrender more, then he reciprocates with some devotees at that stage by making them forget that he is God. It was one of the first things that attracted me to Krishna consciousness is I came to a class at Soho Temple, and they said normally the highest thing you hear about in any religion is that you love God and you have to become a servant of God. But in Krishna consciousness, the highest peak and goal of religion is that God becomes your servant. Because God is the reservoir of all love. And I just thought that's so wonderful. If we look at the different, and you'll hear so many pastimes over the next few days, and as you read, and you'll see, depending on someone's condition, Krishna's either trying to make us remember that he's God, and eventually he'll make us forget that he's God. He wants us to understand first why he's doing what he's doing. Otherwise, you'll still all have this question in your mind, how come Krishna loves me unconditionally but places so many conditions? They're not conditions. They're there to clarify our vision. Even in our relationships here, we notice we misunderstand other people's motives. And then it's their actions we misunderstand. We misunderstand someone's actions because we've misunderstood their motives. Yes? And we too have all experienced being misunderstood. It is painful. When we walk around thinking Krishna doesn't love me unconditionally, because we can't understand why he's doing what he's doing, because we don't recognize the quality of his love or the way he expresses his love, it is heartbreaking for him. Okay, so loving motives are very hard to understand unless we take the time to understand the person, even when we are close to people. So it's a natural part of a spiritual journey where we are recovering our relationship with Krishna. The understanding him and our identity and relationship with him requires hearing his pastimes. In all his different avatars where he manifests and shows that he's God, and the avatars where he doesn't show that he's God. And he simply, when he comes in his original form and just plays. These are so important. He says it himself, one who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities never comes back again. Why? Because then we understand how even when we go through this tumble dryer of the material universe, you know, that turns you round and round and round and heats you up and dries you out and spits you out, you know, even when you're going through that, behind that, it's always Krishna's loving motive. The only thing that needs to change is our vision. So Krishna is always lovingly reciprocating. Understanding the nature of his appearance and his activities helps us to understand his motives. He loves Lord Brahma. He adores Lord Brahma. He's his firstborn. He relies on him to do this work. He adores him. He just wanted to remind Lord Brahma of that. And the only thing that was stopping Brahma from seeing that was his pride in what he did. So he had to make him remember that everything you have, your ability, is given by me. And don't try to recognize me just by my actions. Remove your clouded vision because of the pride you have. You know, remove the clouded vision, the cloud that's created by the pride and attachment you have in the things that you do. So as we approach Janmashtami, we all have so many different things to do. Krishna isn't looking so much at what we are doing, because we are not what we do. We are not also a product of the recognition we get. Krishna's looking at how much are we trying to please him with what we do, and how much are we cooperating. Can we make the atmosphere here like Vrindavan, where we all do our best but complement each other, so that everybody's able to rise to the top? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, thank you for your patience. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any questions or comments? I know we've gone over. No? Hungry for breakfast? Okay, Radha Gokul Nandi ji ki jai, Sita Ram, Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Gaur Nitai ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.